You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 289. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and we've got another rousing, another exciting, another ram-banging, slam-dangling, ram-bunctious episode of the Punk News Podcast made especially for you. We're going to be talking about Andrew Jackson Jihad and their controversial name change. We're going to be talking about White Lung. A lot of people are excited about that. We're going to be talking about Mean Jeans. A lot of people are learning about this band. A lot of people are still a fan of this band. Mean Jeans are kicking it. We're going to be talking about V Subversive of Poison Girls passing away, unfortunately. We're going to be talking about Henry Rollins. We're going to be talking about Adam White's favorite band. We'll get to that more into that later. We're going to be talking about Maximum Vina Ensemble, and we will be talking about perhaps one of Greg Simpson's favorite bands, Weezer. And of course, here with me is podcast that wonderful giggling school teacher out there. We're talking with podcast editor Greg Simpson. Greg Simpson, what's happening? I believe you were just at a hipsterish event. Is that not true?
Oh, totally. Well, In Lafayette, Indiana, you gotta take the rock and roll stuff where you can get it. And the like one really cool bar in town that has weird music of all sorts. It has a 5-part series going. Someone actually that my wife knows. It's Mexican films. It's a lucha libre superhero named El Santo, and they've had movies from 1958 through all the way through the 70s, like 50 movies about this Mexican wrestler who beats aliens and Dracula and all this crazy shit. So they were showing one tonight, and then I trudged back in the snowstorm to be here with you two dudes.
Actually, I'm glad you're bringing it up, but briefly, I mean, are the movies actually good? Are they entertaining, or are they just stupid and they're fun to watch?
They're stupid and fun to watch. They are entertaining, and kind of as a piece of, like, international film history or Mexican film history, like, they are interesting. And Cara's friend, who is also, you know, an academic type, will intro these movies. He's from Colombia, I believe, but he loves these, and he will talk about how there are underlying messages like against communism and you know, like all this stuff that was going on at the time. Like, there are deeper messages, but really on the surface it's just a funny, you know, Plan 9 from Outer Space type movie, you know, where it's just silly fighting and whatever. Good guy beats a bad guy.
I'm going to ask this to the Punk News Podcast listeners because no one can give me a straight answer. A tradition in Mexican wrestling is to have little people dressed up as like the main guys. So I don't know any Mexican wrestlers, but if it was in America, it'd be like Hulk Hogan and a little person dressed as Hulk Hogan. My question is, what's the concept behind that? Is it supposed to be like, is it like mocking the full-size wrestler like they would in like medieval England? Is it just like for fun and has no real reason? What's the reason why they have little people dressed as the big guy? Greg, I assume you don't know the answer to that, do you?
I do not. I mean, I found out about these films through Cara, who found out about them through, you know, her friends. I mean, they're incredibly old movies at this point. So we're not experts by any means. We've only seen two of these wrestler movies, and there's no other lucha libres involved. It's just this one guy, El Santo. He might have some sidekick. They also call him the Man in the Silver Mask, and he might have like a sidekick, but there's no other wrestlers involved. He will wrestle the bad dudes, but there's no like, well, there was a wrestling ring in one of them, but no other dudes in the lucha libre masks. It's just him beating up dudes who aren't wrestlers.
Well, if the podcast listeners know, I want to know, what is the concept between having a little person dressed up as the main wrestling guy? And speaking of a guy that's really into wrestling, we've got the main man, the Chiefy Weefy, the big boss. We've got managing editor Adam White. Adam White, you know, a lot of the Punk News crew is into professional wrestling. I don't really know that much about professional wrestling. Adam White, are you into the big greasy men rolling on top of each other and holding each other down in the mat?
Sexually, but not like, no, actually it's weird because I would never have predicted that this weird, intersection of, I don't know, like music and geek culture and everything else that we kind of live in would have included the professional wrestling thing. Right. Because, like, I remember, like, when I was a kid, that, you know, I had, like, one or two friends that were really into, like, you know, it was the WWF at the time, I guess, right? That were into that kind of thing. And I never was as a kid because I'm like, this is dumb. I don't get it. And then as an adult, it kind of disappeared. And then, but in the past 4 or 5 years, all of a sudden, like 3/4 of the human beings that I know spend a good portion of their time talking about professional wrestling on the internet or going to events or whatever else. I mean, shit, I guess like the primary one would have to be, you know, Scott Heisel over there on your podcast, Greg.
Oh yeah.
And like, I'm totally cool with people being into whatever weird shit they want to be into because I mean, hey, what are we doing here? But I've yet to figure out where like the line is as far as like enjoyment with it. Like, are they in it ironically that they're all into this? No. Are they into it like in some sort of like post irony, like we're just gonna take this for what it is and have a ball thing? I don't know like at what level the enjoyment of that comes in.
Well, I could chime in as far as what Scott likes, and hopefully he'll listen to this and like either like slap me around for it. But he legitimately likes wrestling and has liked it since he was a kid and has never stopped liking it. And there's no irony involved whatsoever. And I don't know if either of you guys have – I know Adam's listened to at least a couple episodes of Best Midwestern, but it comes up almost every week to the point where it's a running gag because I used to give him shit about it to the point where he'd be – like hurts, like mad about it. Like, dude, I really like it. And I'm like, you're a fucking dork or whatever. And I'm like, I'm a dork for other reasons, so I got to cut him some slack. And now I just bring up John Cena all the time because he legitimately hates John Cena because he's – and I'm like, is he a good guy? Yeah, he's a good guy, but he's a fucking idiot and this and that. And what I'm like, whoa, okay. Well, he really likes wrestling.
Well, there you have it. I like Andre the Giant. Listen, I wanted to mention this is not related to welcome back to the wrestling podcast. This is not related to the wrestling at all. Adam White and Greg Simpson, but especially Adam White, you won't believe this. So Discogs, the online website Discogs, where basically you can list your records, sell records, and buy records. I love Discogs. Greg Simpson, do you like Discogs?
I think I need to get more into it.
Dude, I love Discogs.
Yeah, I love just getting classic albums just because they're great albums, but it seems like that site, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, almost has the spin where it's like really for those collectors that are looking for like a certain like release, like the year, like precisely, a re-release or precisely. The, yeah, so like that kind of, or this color of the vinyl or this color of the label, like it kind of delves into all that minutia, right?
See, well, I love it because, like, you can, like, say, I want this one rare record. Like, I just got the Painted Black demo, like, a couple of weeks ago, which I was excited to get. And it'll just tell you when it's up there. And sometimes you get stuff for, like, really cheap. Adam White, you like Discogs, right? You're a fan.
Yeah. I've gone and I've cataloged, like, everything that's not a CD that I own extensively in it. And I've become the kind of person that will – like if I get something and it is not in there yet, I'm trying to gleefully be the first person to plug this into their system. Like I was at like a Sideman show in a basement a few months ago, and I got like this 7-inch that they had gone and I think it was one of those what do they call them? What's that like plasticky stuff you'd print like a picture disc on? Really low runs of it.
Lathe.
Yeah, lathe cut, right? So they did this like lathe cut picture disc, and it was a limit of 32 of them, right? So I'm like, I get home with it, and the first thing I could think was that, is this thing on Discogs? And I'm like, it's not. I have to be the person to plug this fucker in, right?
Such a nerd.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm cool with that. The only thing that drives me a little bit crazy about it is that I have a huge wish list of stuff that I want, and some of the stuff that I want isn't really all that rare. I just, like, I want it, but I'm not prepared to go buy it right now for just like
– true.
Right? I don't need to buy this right now, but I do want it. So Discogs will email me like 4 times a week being like, Adam, we found a copy of the Cost of Living EP by The Clash that you could go buy. And I'm like, yes, thank you. I know there's lots of those. I'm not buying them right now though. So that's not their fault. That's more my fault. But yeah, Discogs is cool.
Well, not to drag this out, but have you ever been too slow on the trigger? You get an email. It's like Adam or you know this rare record. It's been listed for $12, and you go to click to buy, and someone beat you to the punch. Have you ever had that happen?
Yes. There. I was dancing around on the first Constantine's record, and then someone bought it. But yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
and it's funny, you know, like if you did, like for me, if you didn't buy it and it was up there for a year, you'd be like, yeah, it's still up there. Maybe I'll get it. But then the moment someone buys it, you're like, oh, I want it. You know. But unrelated, Adam White, you'll know this off the bat. Guess which was the most sold record on Discogs for 2015? They've released their results, which you can find at Discogs.com.
Is it Rumors?
Bingo! Fleetwood, I'm not even shitting you. The most sold record on Discogs was Fleetwood Mac's Rumors. And if you're a fan of the Punk News Podcast, you'll know how that's a recurring gag, if you will. a couple other fun facts. The most expensive record sold in 2015 was Judge's Chung King Can Suck It on green vinyl, which I think is the rarest one, $6,000.
Whoa!
And number six was the Smiths. Like the very first version of Hand in Glove with an alternate cover. I think it was like 30 of them. That went for $3,120. And interestingly, I don't know why, the eighth most expensive record was a copy of Damned, Damned, Damned that went for $2,800. But I mean, Damn, 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 like first press, maybe 15 or 20 bucks beat up, maybe 30, like really good condition. So I don't know why that one went for a lot of money. They didn't sell Discogs, because I wish they did. But listen, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Let's blast through a couple of mails here. Dear Adam and John, on an earlier podcast, John was saying that he thought 2015 was a weaker year for music. I'm not really excited that much for 2016. Are you excited for anything? And do you think that one year can be weaker on average than music, or is that a fallacy? That's from Jane.
There's definitely been weaker years, but they tend to be, for me, like weaker years when you start to like do something like a top 20. Like if you're there's some years where I'll sit down and I have no problem, you know, like instantly pulling together like, wow, I really loved these 20 records, and then, you know, I'm just farting around trying to figure out which order I'm putting them in. But there's definitely been years where, you know, I've got maybe 5 or 6 or 7, and then everything else is a little bit more dicey as to whether it's on there, and you kind of get towards the end of the year and you think, you know, I want to start listening to other stuff right now, because I'm sure something is better than what I want to put on this list, right? So yeah, I feel like that happens. I don't know if it happens for any reason. I think it's just like the roll of the dice as to like which bands that you tend to like happen to be in and out of release cycles or whatever at that time. So I don't know if there's like a, you know, there's no science to it. I think it's just kind of something that happens. But there's definitely. There's been better or worse years, I think. As to what am I looking forward to this year? It's a good question. That Dirty No record just came out. So, hey, I'm all about that. But, I don't know really. There used to be a time in my life where I would go through and really keep track of like the stuff that I knew was going to come out. And at this point, I'm just hoping that like when these things emerge, I'm just going to roll with it. So I'm not like off the top of my head sure what the big things are this year. And I think part of it is that a lot of the bands that I know that are recording, we're in this weird kind of world right now where bands are recording stuff, but if they're actually trying to release it, the lead time on getting something out, especially on vinyl, is pretty dicey. So it's actually affecting like release years of things. So I like an example for this. I know like New Swears is a band that I really like, and their record that came out in 2014 up here in Canada, and then 2015 it came out on Dirt Cult in the US. I really like that, and I know they're in the studio like as of January recording something. But I know from talking to them that, well, okay, they're going to record it, but then they might shop it around to a label a little bit. And then by the time the thing comes out, it's maybe at the end of the year. But then if they're, you know, if they want to take it and go on tour with a bunch of LPs that they've had pressed, well, you know, they got to compete with everyone fucking pressing new copies of Rumors, right? So that might not come out until April of the year after. So I don't know when things come out this year. So yeah, so I have nothing particularly in mind that is the one big major thing I'm waiting for this year. John, what about you?
I'm looking for the new Lacerre record, the new the Melvins have not had a record coming out for like 10 years. There's always been a Melvins record coming out for the past like 10 years. So I'm looking forward to Melvins. I'm looking forward to Lacerre. The Amoebix reissue I'm looking forward to. But I mean, honestly, I'm not quite blown away by 2016 yet. I was blown away by 2014. 2015, a lot of great releases, a little underwhelming. But not blown away. But I do agree that I think, at least for me personally, some years can be less interesting than others. And I wonder if you averaged all music, like totally, like all music ever released, and you had some objective creature, like listen to it all and decide whether or not some years can be better than others. I kind of think maybe some years are better than others, to tell you the truth, even though tons of music. Greg, I don't know if you've got an opinion on that.
Well, I mean, we all know that the years that are doubles are the best. So, like, you know, 1966 was a great year. 1977 was a great year. 1980, no, I mean, it's, I'm just.
That is true.
Right?
Well, 1988 was pretty bad.
Well, if you look into, like, I mean, I'm talking about, like.
I've got to imagine that 1999 was pretty bad, too.
Yeah, okay. But I'm talking about, like, the shit that we like. I'm not talking about. It started to, you know, music started to splinter more. We all know that. Sub-genres, you know, commercial radio and then college radio, that kind of stuff. So I'm talking about as far as, like, bands I like 1985 was really awesome. Like, Husker Du, Jesus and Mary Chain, like, all, you know, this kind of stuff. Minutemen, Meat Puppets, like, all these kind of bands. As far as, like, pop music being great, I mean, in a certain year, I mean, we're splitting hairs when we're getting to that, but. Should I talk about what I like from this year so far?
What are you excited to, I mean, briefly, what are you excited that's coming out?
Should I say stuff that's already come out that I really like, or stuff that's...
It's punk rock, Greg. Do whatever you want.
Savages, I'm finally getting into. Really? You guys like Savages?
Yeah. Not a huge fan. I know the second record was kind of a letdown for a lot of people.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the one that just came out. I don't think it's a letdown at all. I mean, maybe people are saying it's a little less aggressive. I mean, but to me, it's like it's a love story, but it's the most aggressive love story ever. And I think this the chick, I'm blanking on her name, the singer, is fucking awesome. And to me, it's like Susie Sue meets like PJ Harvey. I mean, it's I like it a lot. But I'm going to say one thing. Well, Parquet Courts are coming out with a new album, I think, so that could be cool. But other than that, I'm just going to say one thing that I already mentioned, that Jesus and Mary Chain, fucking one of my favorite bands of all time. Psycho Candy is one of the greatest albums ever. They went into the studio at some point last year and maybe will release a new album, which would be their first one since, I believe, 1998. The Monkey came out on Sub Pop. That was their last album, and then the brothers hated each other. So they might put out a new album.
Dude, what is it with what is it with
explode?
What is it with brothers and bands hating each other? Brothers and bands always make the best music, and they always hate each other afterwards. I don't know why. Anyway, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Greg, hit us with a jam.
Oh, all right. I'm going to play, and I don't even know how to pronounce this fucking band's name, but I'm in Lafayette, Indiana, and there is this young woman who grew up here named Haley Four, and she now has a band that's making it pretty big on the indie circuit, is on Thrill Jockey Records out of Chicago. She now lives there. The band, I believe, is called Cirque de You. It's spelled like circuit, like a circuit in electronic. D-E-S and then Y-E-U-X, fucking French. I don't know. It's got an X on the end.
Cirque Y-E-U-X.
Yeah. Cirque de You or Circuit de You. I don't know. The album's called In Plain Speech. She, another strong female vocalist, has like the warble of Patti Smith while like the intensity of Karen O on stage. So I'm going to play a song off In Plain Speech. It's called Do the Dishes. Thank you.
something be inside of you. Something that's worth reaching into. There's something deep inside of you. Something that's worth reaching into. Something deep inside of you. Something that's worth reaching into. Makes me tremble. It makes me shake.
And that was a band that I cannot pronounce. So, hi, I'm Adam. We're going to talk about some of the stories that happened this past week. The big one, this is something we only posted like 5 hours ago, but it has been the most commented on thing I've seen in the last little while. The band Andrew Jackson Jihad have officially changed their name to AJJ. Which is interesting because when you actually have to say that, it is not a fun name to say.
AJJ? AJJ?
Yeah.
AJJ.
It has no flow to it. Anyways, so according to the band, they have felt that the name Jihad might be offensive to Muslims and that they didn't want to be associated with President Andrew Jackson anymore. They also released a new video for a song called Now That I'm at the Top of My Game. That they have kind of released to coincide with this name change. I'm going to read a little bit of their statement here because I find it curious, and I want to maybe put it in their words. And there's a cat yelling at me, so if you guys hear cat,
yeah, sorry,
there's cat it's involved in this.
Fry, shut up.
No, it's my cat.
Oh,
are you guys cats talking to each other across the podcast?
They might be.
Potentially. So anyways.
What if the whole time during the podcast, like the cats are recording their own podcast and cats listen to it on their own and tone us out and just listen to the two cats speaking. Sorry, Adam. Go ahead.
That is way more interesting than what I'm about to read. Okay.
I'll make a special mix for cats.
This is the statement. The statement goes, "Hi, gang. Big news today. We were officially changing our name from Andrew Jackson Jihad to the simple, familiar abbreviation that most of you already call us, AJJ. The two reasons for this are, one, we are not Muslims, and as such, it is disrespectful and irresponsible of us to use the word jihad in our band's name. Two, we no longer wish to be a living reminder of President Andrew Jackson. Interesting historical figure as he was an odious person, and our fascination with him has grown stale. We are very sorry to any people who this name has offended. We would like to thank those who have reached out to us over the years to let us know that the name is problematic, especially those who reached out with kindness. Had we known in 2004 that we would still be making music together 12 years later, we most certainly would have chosen a more thoughtful name from the start. The name AJJ fits us better than Andrew Jackson Jihad. It has been our nickname for those that know us forever. It harkens back to the great skate punk bands like JFA, FYP, LFO, etc. It also retains, even amplifies, the quality that I liked about the name Andrew Jackson Jihad, that it can be interpreted in different ways. Now we are AJJ, and that can mean Arizona Juvenile Justice, Anonymous Junk Jugglers, or actress January Jones, and they credit Chris Farron with coming up with that one. The possibilities are endless, and we're very excited to see what you can all come up with. So there's more to that, but I'll leave that there. John, this seems like it would take a few of your censorship boxes, but AJJ, go.
Well, luckily, I am able to approach this from a slightly different angle than I have before. There's a lot to unpack here. First, we all remember Viet Cong, who basically people demanded that they change the name. So they said, okay, we'll change our name. Andrew Jackson Jihad was not bullied or forced or intimidated into changing their name. So if they want to change their name, that's fine. More power to them. If that's what they want to do, that's fine. So, I mean, I'm not going to slam them for making the name change. However, were it me, I certainly would not change the name, and I don't think the reasoning is necessarily sound. And actually, I mean, what they're saying is simply using the word jihad may be offensive to Muslim people, and I think that line of reasoning might be offensive to Muslim people, to tell you the truth. Clearly, not all Muslim people are interested in doing jihads. Clearly, not all Muslim people want to do jihad to people or whatever. So the mere fact that they're automatically assuming that jihads, which a extremely tiny, small subset of crazy Muslims do, that all Muslim people would identify with, is saying that he thinks all Muslim people have an association with that word. That would be like me saying crusades is an offensive term. I think that in and of itself is offensive, but I'm not a Muslim. Well, actually, there's another interesting thing that we can talk about related to that. Also, I think, as I've said before, I think punk rock and music as a whole and society as a whole, current kowtowing towards not offending people is now not only affecting art, but it's dumbing down people and actually separating people and harming people's intellectual thoughts. It's one thing if the name of your band is meant to offend people. I'm trying to think of a band that has a name that's meant to – it's got to be like some white power
anal
band.
Anal cunt.
No, but see, I mean, I think that's a funny name. I'm just trying to think of a white power. Like, let's just say there's a white power band name. I don't know, First Order. You know what I mean? Like, that's an offensive name, and it's meant to scare Jewish people and gay people and gypsy people and whoever else. So that's an offensive name. But if your name is not supposed to be offensive, and you have to change it, or you feel that you have to change it because someone might misinterpret it as being offensive towards them, that means you're kowtowing to people that are incorrectly reading or incorrectly interpreting what you're saying, which means that not only does speech have to be in of itself inoffensive, but if anybody wants to arbitrarily say it's offensive, you have to change it too. I think that gives way too much power to the listener and the observer, and I think that basically is open for abuse, and I think as we've seen, that mentality that if someone's, quote, offended, then you have to change it, has already abused and damaged and shackled a great amount of art. So I think it's foolish. I wish Andrew Jackson Jihad would step up and say, listen, this is ridiculous. No Muslim person is feel – well, I can't say this, but I would say no reasonable person sees our name as Andrew Jackson Jihad and is offended. And even if they're offended, so what? Life's offensive, you know? The purpose of life, the purpose of art is not to not offend people. So my key point is this is – I think this is way too being – I almost wonder if they're just making a stand because they find it amusing and they don't even really worry about offending other people. But listen, you can't create art only so long as it might offend someone if they misinterpreted your art. That's the death of art, and that's scary, and I wish more bands would stand up for that. And that's why bands like – I wish there were more bands like Anal Cunt these days that are just offensive bands or offensive towards everyone. I'd much rather have art that is offensive and makes people feel bad – that you can say what you want to say, than this current culture we have where, I mean, I think it's quite clear that there's only a certain range of permitted thoughts, and if you don't fall in rank and file with those thoughts, then you're basically persecuted by the majority, which is the core, which is the antithesis of the core tenets of the Constitution. The first clause of the First Amendment. So that's what I'm saying. This band, I mean, if they want to change the name, that's fine. More power to them. Would I make this decision? No. And I think this is a symptomatic of a way, 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 way too overprotective, I guess, artistic society where art is quite clearly being damaged and harmed by people's sensitivity. Well, you know what? It's time for us all to be less sensitive. That's what I'm saying.
Dang. That's some lawyering right there. I don't know what I missed because I don't know if you guys realized I left the call for like 30 seconds or something.
It was just me ranting about Constitution, free speech. Although this is another thing that I've brought up before. One of the commenters said this, and you know, like heavy metal bands say horrible things about Christianity all the time. So how is this different than saying bad things about Christianity? And I think those bands should be able to say bad things about Christianity. But how is this different? Not all Muslims are in the jihads. Only a very tiny few crazy people are in the jihads. So why would that offend the Muslim population as a whole? You see?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You see? No, yeah. I agree with you. No, go ahead, Em.
No, I mean, see, and I wouldn't – I mean, and again, I can't speak for Muslim people because, you know, that's not me. But clearly under the context of the name is that they weren't talking about Muslim people. They were – you know, they were talking about Andrew Jackson, and that's what made the whole thing kind of like a quirky, funny name. What bothers me more, I think, than them deciding to change the name is that they changed to something weak.
Yeah.
Like, and I've seen bands with slightly offensive names, I guess, do this before. And there's a bit of a, like a shit or get off the pot thing that comes up here. So there's a band from Toronto, it's a bunch of 70s punk guys that are actually like lawyers and politicians these days, but they have a punk band still. And the band is called Shit From Hell. And then at some point, they stopped being Shit From Hell, and they just started being like SFH.
Mm.
But it was never – they didn't do a grand statement like this. They were not like, we're not called Shit From Hell anymore. We're SFH. But they just – clearly at one point, they had a meeting as a band and decided that like in public, they were only going to refer to themselves as SFH from then on. And that's always kind of drove me a little bit crazy because, I mean, if you're going to be a band called Shit From Hell, just fucking commit, right?
Yeah.
Like you didn't pick that band name so that you could get on, like, you know.
Maury.
Modern radio or MTV or whatever.
Maury. Maury. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
I just thought of Maury Povich.
you didn't pick that name because you wanted to, you know, because you were trying to pursue fame. And I mean, let's face it, you're a bunch of 50-year-old dudes, you know, playing scuzzy bars in Toronto once every 4 months. You're not going to get that big. So just be Shit From Hell and enjoy the fact bosses, that that's...
Maybe one of their bosses found their band online and is this you?
These guys... Shit From Hell is a band that... a guy that we've talked about in the podcast a couple times before named Warren Kinsella, who he has been called Canada's James Carville. He is a he has been instrumental in the political war rooms of like a handful of winning campaigns for both like the federal and provincial liberal parties up here in Canada. He is a pretty big name lawyer with a pretty big name law firm. The dude is a public figure. They have him on, you know, he's on, you know, if there's an event that requires his commentary, he'll be the talking head that they bring on to the news to talk about it. Right. Warren is amazing. He's great. So, but like of anyone, he doesn't have anyone that he could possibly offend. So like, just be shit from hell. So, but that's what this feels like a little bit with me, where it's like if they really felt that their name was problematic, then they could just change the name and not have to not explain their way out of it in sort of a weak way. Like having to come out and repeatedly say in the statement that, look, everybody called us AJJ anyways, so we're just going to be AJJ. Well, it's like, well,
like, did you guys call them AJJ? If I typed it, maybe.
Yeah,
I would never call them.
I would say Andrew Jackson Jihad. I wouldn't say AJJ. Like it comes off the tongue weird, AJJ, you know. No. Can we all agree that the best initial band is MDC?
Oh yeah. but the other thing about MDC is like, even like to me, like there are certain letters where if you say them, they will sound good just saying phonetically the letters. And MDC sounds okay. AJJ is cacophonous. It is an awkward thing to say, is the name of the band.
Have you guys talk about an awkward name. I don't want to pimp my own bands like, but I always do. I don't know if you guys have heard my new band, but we're called the Dick Cheney that ate Cheboygan, and that's Cheboygan with a C. So we are DCAC, which being so close to AC/DC is pretty amazing coincidence. We do not do that on purpose. But DCAC with a lightning bolt in the
middle. You know what, though? I can appreciate that because it is super weird. So that's okay if it's like completely cacophonous. But like, I don't know, like this, I feel that they're way too insecure about making this change. Yeah. That's the sense that I got from this, especially when they're
putting around.
Well, yeah. Well, when they went and they tried to come up with like, look at all these fun things that you could change yourself. You could, you know, we could call us Actress January Jones, right? Like, it'd be way better if they just changed their name to Actress January Jones and gave no reason for it.
Or wait, what if they did the MDC thing and just changed their name for every record? That'd be cool.
Like, I mean, I don't want to cast too much shade in these guys because, you know, hey, you were called Andrew Jackson Jihad for 12 years. That takes some amount of balls, I guess. But just, you know, just be the band name that you want to be. Don't try to come up with a bunch of reasons like this. It's not.
I want more offensive bands, Adam. I want more bands that are offensive. I do.
I mean, yeah, I in general do too, right? But
I want bands that people are just grossed out by that. I don't want a band that picks on one particular class of people, but I want a band that picks on all classes of people that it just makes everyone mad. Like, you know, like AXCX for.
So yeah,
there,
I don't know where
there was a band in. There's a band in Bloomington called Butt Piss. I really enjoyed that.
See, Butt Piss is a great name.
That's gross. Yeah, that's really gross.
I know, right? You said the gross people out. Butt Piss. I know, Adam, you used to play bass. Do you still play bass, like, around the house?
I mean, it's in the closet, and I can see the closet from where I'm sitting.
Oh, so. It's in the closet. So you've been in a band. You've had to make a choice. You've had to pick a band name.
No, this is all wrong. I have not. I own a bass.
Really?
I'm not in a band. Nope.
I thought you used to be in like some sort of like casual ska band.
That's Rich. Rich used to be in One Eyed Hoagie.
John, have you ever been in a band?
I have been in an experimental electro sound clash band that even I'm not sure if it was ironic or not. Like, I don't know.
What was it called?
It was called the Locust Collective.
Okay. Picking a band name is fucking hard, and that's why this new band I'm in just went with the most ridiculous fucking thing possible.
Is this new band your Bowie cover band?
No. We're called Major Tom and the Pretty Things.
Wait, how many bands do you have, Greg?
Three right now, but the Bowie thing is temporary. We're just going to ride that out till the summer and have fun with it. So I'm in two. The one, I mean, Outdoor Valar, I play guitar, and drums and keyboard and really whatever else. And this new one, I play synthesizer. Car's mom told us we sound like the Doors. I don't know how I feel about that, but we have no bass player, so it's me like kind of playing bass on the keys as well as the lead. So I guess I get that comparison, but you know. So I'm in three bands, but really only two real bands, original bands.
Well, I'm hope you're enjoying the Greg Simpson podcast, where we talk exclusively about Greg Simpson's multiple bands. Speaking of another one of Greg Simpson's bands, White Lung, which is probably Greg's most well-known band, they've released a new LP and they've released a new video. The new song was basically, I would say it's fairly radically different, or at least not radically different, and it's a significant change from their previous work. The new song is called Hungry. It's got a video which was gross, but I enjoyed it a lot. Adam White, what did you think of it? I think you're a pretty big White Lung fan, aren't you, Adam White?
I am, yeah.
What did you think of the video? Are you excited for the new LP?
I was excited for the new LP anyways. I'm very excited for the new LP now, because I was not expecting them to go in this, like I don't know, like, what would you call this new sound? Like, they're doing a little bit, like, they kind of went new wave?
Yeah, I would say post-punk new wave, perhaps. I mean, it's like, it's new wave, but it's not nice new wave. It's mean new wave. I would call it, no, I would say it's post-punk no wave. That's what I would say.
So,
I don't know. Are you familiar with much no wave? This is way too...
listenable?
Pleasant sound. Right, exactly. Mm. Like, it's not like dudes hitting a guitar with a sledgehammer or something. You know, it's... this. I really did like this, and I'm only... I mean, I'm in the band, right, John? But I
it's only you in the band. I think you're the entire band.
I'm really excited about our new direction. I like this song a lot. I was only a casual listener to them. I don't own any of their – how many albums did they have before this? I don't even
know.
Three,
I believe.
Yeah. Deep
Fantasy and Sorry, and there was – was there another one?
What's the one with the melting face? Is that Sorry?
I feel like that was – Sorry.
I'm almost sure there's three. I'll look it up right now. You two talk.
Yeah.
I just want Adam to say sorry as much as possible.
Is that a Canadian accent thing?
I love it. Editing the podcast.
They've done three previous albums. It's the Evil, Sorry, and Deep Fantasy.
It's the Evil.
It's the Evil.
It's the Evil? Oh, It's the Evil is one with the squares. Okay, yeah. There we go. Anyways, like, so if this record comes out and this is like the only song we've heard from it. So if it's sort of a mix between this tempo stuff or stuff that's like a little more like, I don't know, like dark wave or new wave or anything like that. Like, if it's a little bit more of that mixed with some of their more aggressive stuff, then that has the potential to be really cool, just because it'll give them a little bit more dynamics within the record. I mean, if there's any problem I have with White Lung, and White Lung are great, it's that the early White Lung songs are all sort of like, you know, they're all at 11, and you can go through like, you can go through five or six of them, and then you're just like, holy fuck, how much more White Lung can I take before my head explodes, right? Like, they're just loud and angry and, you know, boom, 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 boom. So if they're going to mix that up with some of this stuff, then that's going to make for a more interesting LP, and I'm cool with that. The thing that I'm worried about here, and this is actually one of our commenters kind of mentioned this, is this doesn't sound all that far from, say, Metric. Mm. And there's definitely Metric songs that I like, but Metric are boring. So I would not want them to like exclusively do this sound, because it's too easy at that point to, you know, you're pretty close to poppy, so why not just be poppy?
Is White Lung pulling a Ceremony?
That is an interesting question. We'll have to see how much it sounds like Joy Division when it's all said and done.
So you don't like Metric. So there is a Canadian band that you don't like. Well, let's be like, is that right?
I like news. No. I like Of Metric.
Metric's first album was pretty great.
Metric's first album had some. I think Metric's first album had some actually pretty killer punk songs on it. The one even that was the single, like Monster Hospital, I think was like a really good punk rock song. I don't know if I have their albums right, but the second one, the one that had Give Me Sympathy on it,
yeah, I don't know,
anyone, Beatles and the Rolling Stones, that song. Anyways.
Oh, yeah.
There is definitely, I thought that was a really good pop record. There were songs in that record that were super catchy, and I was totally okay to hear on the radio a million times. I feel that everything I've heard since then has just been kind of middle of the road and samey. And, you know, I'm cool with you. I'm cool with you being a pop band or something like that, but don't go for the mushy middle, you know? And I felt that like a lot of the metric stuff I've ever heard since then, just been like, eh, like, all right. So, you know, I don't want White Lung to go too far down that road, but, you know, this is cool. I'm cool with this. I can live with it.
Yeah. I liked the song. It was cool.
One more song that recently came out that people are talking about here, Mean Jeans. A new song from them called Night Vision was premiered over at the AV Club. It's the title track from an upcoming 7-inch, which comes out on March 18th via Fat Records. The 7-inch is going to have two B-sides on it that will not appear on the band's upcoming full-length. This song, Night Vision, will. And that one is coming out on Fat Records at some point later in the year. I'm not sure when the release date of the Mean Jeans one is. But you can find a link to the song over on Punk News right now. So Mean Jeans, one of the new crop of Fat Rec bands. John, did you is this up your alley?
Yeah, you know, I'm becoming more and more of a Mean Jeans fan. I was actually recently listening to their singles collection, which is really good. I was surprised that this is a little mid-tempo. The question with a Fat Records release is, what Fat Records generally does is take a band and clean up their sound a little bit, make it a little poppier. I mean, they did it with Nightbirds to a lesser degree, but they did that with quite a great deal with Masked Intruder, but they were poppy to begin with. But pretty much any modern band that you bring up Fat, they'll clean it up a little bit. I'm hoping that Mean Jeans keeps their energy and maybe even increases it a little bit. A lot of bands just don't quite have enough whap for me. I want more energy. I want more charging. One of the commenters basically said, I'm surprised that this is on Fat Records. And honestly, I wasn't surprised that this was on Fat Records at all, to tell you the truth. Like, I guess people were thinking that the fat bands are all like Lagwagon or what's the pseudo-heavy metal band? Oh, I can't remember their name.
Strung Out?
Strung Out, yeah. But I mean, to me, Fat Records is a punk rock label that likes kind of, you know, gnarly bands that might be a little offensive or at least a little funny or silly, that love getting drunk and love getting wasted and just like to rock out. And that's exactly what Mean Jeans is. So I think it's a great fit. I think if they put out an album on – did they say they're putting out an album or just a single?
Seven-inch.
I think they have a full album.
Yeah, well, I'm excited for the album. Actually, you know, I think they're upcoming. I think it's a great fit for Fat Records. I think if Fat Records, I actually think Mean Jeans could use a little bit of cleaning up. I think their sound could use a little bit more clarity. So I think it's a great fit, and I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah,
this
is. No, go ahead. Jay.
This is another band, kind of like White Lung, where I'd only, you know, in passing, you know, like if they have a new album out, people are talking about it. Oh, this sounds cool. You know, I'll listen to a stream. I've streamed their albums a couple of times. White Lung, this band. But again, like with White Lung, I listen to that new song. I'm like, hey, maybe this is more up my alley. Same deal with this. And maybe I just like cleaner stuff than John. John and I get into the debate between melody and whatever. And I think
melody
this
good music.
Song. No. You don't think good music can have melody?
No, I do. I think you're – I still don't quite agree with your definition. I think your definition of melody is soft music. My definition of melody is interesting, contrasting and cooperative musical lines that sound interesting together. So to me, Slayer has melody.
Slayer definitely has melody.
Oh.
But like Melvins maybe not so much.
Melvins have melody? What are we talking about?
Okay. Like
Anal Cunt does not have melody.
Yeah, okay, right, yeah.
But I don't like I love the band, but their songs sound like garbage.
They do.
That's like the third time that band's been mentioned on the show tonight.
Anal, cunt. I'll put a bunch of reverb and echo on that. So Mean Jeans, like I like a hook that I can hold on to. Like I don't listen to a lot of pop, like as far as mainstream stuff goes, but I like a rock band that can write a really catchy hook. And it can be gritty, like Best Midwestern just talked about Dead Boys, and like I fucking love Dead Boys, and they kind of ushered in what punk was in the 80s, like outside of hardcore. And even though you know, singing like that, they're like the first orgcore band. Like there's melody. Dead Boys? They're like there's melody, but it's really fucking rough. And kind of along the same lines as the Sex Pistols, like even though you know, Johnny Rotten is like there's notes, there's still got the energy that John, I mean, you like the Sex Pistols, right?
I'm a huge Sex Pistols. Everybody, so I think melody. Everybody at punk news is a huge Sex Pistols fan, to tell you the truth.
Sure. So there's melody there. It's not melody like the Ramones, like going for bubblegum stuff, but I need like some hook. And you know, the Sex Pistols did have hooks. And this Mean Jeans thing, like I'm saying, you're saying it's maybe cleaned up a little bit, and maybe that's a good thing for them. And I would, I'm agreeing with you, John, that I think this might be the time when I finally jump on this band.
I think we're on the exact same Mean Jeans trip, to tell you the truth, Greg.
Yes, yes.
Well, let's bring it down a little bit. Unfortunately, V Subversive of Poison Girls has passed away, and a lot of the listeners might not know who V Subversive is or the Poison Girls. Poison Girls are a very, very early anarcho-punk band. They're probably one of the first anarcho-punk bands along with Crass. I mean, they might be the second or third anarcho-punk band, to tell you the truth. What's interesting about V Subversive is she started the Poison Girls. Actually, there was a proto-Poison Girls band. But she started the band when she was already 40 and had two or three children at the time, which was pretty much unheard of at the time. And then not only that is the music was very arrhythmic, very avant-garde, very daring, very weird, sometimes difficult to listen to. And addressed – they were one of the very first bands, really maybe the first band, to really, really, really address feminist and women's issues in music. And so they're an incredibly important band. I know it's a failing on my part, and I feel bad about this, honestly. Like I've known about Poison Girls for probably 10 years now, but I've never really given them a good listen. Mainly, I think, because a lot of their music is very difficult to wrap around, so – I mean, like, people say that Crass is unlistenable, but Crass rocks. It's pretty easy to listen to Crass, at least the first three albums and the singles. Yeah. But Poison Girls are, like, a level above that, like, difficulty-wise. So it's really hard to just really bite into Poison Girls. Well, that's a weird phrase, way to put that. It's really hard to really grasp Poison Girls unless you sit down and say, I am going to teach myself Poison Girls so I can get it. So it's a failing on my part, and I feel bad that I never really checked him out. She would have been a fantastic interview, and I regret missing that. So I'm going to dig into him now. Adam and Greg, do you guys have any Poison Girls reflections, or did you watch this third video that we posted at Punk News? It's not Visa Versus' very last show, but it's one of her last shows at age 79, covering the classic Poison Girls song, Tart. Did you guys watch this live video, which you can see at punknews.org?
Yeah, I did. And I'm probably worse than you about this, is that I had like no knowledge of this band.
Me neither.
But then, holy shit, like, you see that, and you don't normally see, you know, someone that is, like, a legitimate senior citizen doing a punk rock song like that, but doing it, like, passionately and doing it, giving it justice and everything. So, yeah, it's an amazing little video. I feel the same way as you, where I'm like, oh, shit, this is a thing that I really should have been more versed in. So I'm playing catch up, same as you, I think.
Yeah, I'm the same boat as you, Adam. I had heard of the name, heard of her, but I don't know if I'd even heard in passing a Poison Girls song. And these videos are pretty rad and just inspiring for, you know, a dude like me who is getting older. I mean, I'm not 70. I'm not even.
She's 79 here, Greg. You're like, what, 34?
I'm not too old to rock and roll, and she proves that you're never too old to rock and roll if you really get that spirit, right? It's inspiring.
I thought, first, I don't know, I'm usually against the acoustic guy or acoustic gal thing, but I thought this video was incredibly touching, just how the lyrics kind of were circular. You know, it begins with the phrase, if I had my time again, which I don't know, maybe it's hokey, but there's something moving or affecting about an older person saying, singing a song about if I had my time again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So let's play Poison Girls' track and try to make up for the time we lost. Should we play the original studio version of Tart, or should we play this acoustic version from V's 79th? Well, when should we 79? What should we play?
I would say the original one might be more like to win over the kids.
We'll play the original one. I encourage you to listen, because the original one, it is fairly avant-garde. But then if you go and watch this acoustic video, you'll see that underneath this weird sound, there's actually I call a normal or a standard song underneath all these weird sounds. So listen to this tune. If you dig it, be sure to check out the Poison Girls video online at punknews.org and all of the Poison Girls discography.
Hello? Hello?
We are back. Let's just blow through some stuff. We'll go through this very quickly. Henry Rollins recently appeared on a Comedy Central show called This Is Not Happening, and it's about 25 minutes long. It's pretty interesting, and he basically just tells the tale of the first time he did acid. And the story is basically one member of Black Flag convinced him to do acid, and he went and he did acid with one of his lady friends. He doesn't say which member of Black Flag told him to do acid, and he doesn't say which lady friend he went and visit, but I would be willing to bet $2,000 I can get them both right. Greg, did you watch this video?
I did not watch the whole thing.
Well, who do you think convinced him to do acid?
I mean, probably Greg Ginn.
No.
He's too much of a square. I don't know.
Greg Ginn smokes weed all day, but he's a guy he called an intellectual mastermind and terrorist. That can only be one guy. Dukowski. It's got to be Chuck Dukowski. It's got to be Chuck Dukowski. I mean, like a guy that can manipulate people with his mind just by the way he speaks, it's got to be Dukowski. And who do you, I'm almost sure I know who the lady who he visited was. I could be wrong about this one. It's got to be Lydia Lunch. That's what I'm saying. I'm almost sure it's Lydia Lunch. So anyway, that's just my guess. Listen to it. It's an interesting app. It is pretty interesting. Check it out. Greg, you want to hit us with the next story?
Oh, sure. Okay. Oh, nice. My favorite. Though I really want Adam to say the name. What's the name of the band I'm about to talk about, Mr. N. White?
Black Audio. That's what it's called. Isn't that what it's called?
You're
pissed
Black me Audio? Off. I hate you.
No, hold on. I'm going to take the name, and I'm I'm gonna plug the name into the thing on the Mac that it'll speak it back to you. Hold on, I'm gonna play it to myself.
Okay.
And
Blaqk.
Yeah, it just says black, Greg. I don't know what you. That's not how it's spelled.
I fucking hate you. I quit Punk News forever. So Davey Havoc and Jade Puget.
Fuck, Greg. Sorry, I can't pronounce anything. You know me on this show. It was sound like blah, resonant. Right?
Blah. Black audio.
Black audio.
Yeah, it's got. I feel that it's a little bit of like. How the Klingons were created, but really to represent the Soviets, right? So it's a little bit Klingon, but a little bit Russian. So what John just did there, where it was like, it wasn't just like blah, it was like blah, like it has to, that's go down at the end.
My name is Worf, son of Moog, and my favorite band is Blah Audio.
Yeah, this is a throwback to like 2 years ago. No one who's listening to this remembers this episode, but it was when I was on, which are rare, where we talked about black audio, and Adam said it like that, and I just lost my shit. And I can't say the word black, the color black, without saying it like that. So let me finally read this fucking story. Davey Havoc of AFI has announced that his electro duo with Jade Puget, Black Audio, will be releasing a new album, Material, on April 15th via Black
Noise. Oh, they made a label. Look at that.
Black Noise.
Black Noise.
Someone else needs to finish this. I cannot.
And Cobalt Records. Havoc has been busy lately after announcing earlier this month that he'd be joining members of No Doubt without Gwen Stefani in a yet unnamed project.
Oh, jeez.
And so Davey Havoc and Jade Puget of AFI have an electro pop band that I don't remember what happened with that project originally. I feel that it was we talked about it and nothing much came of it. And was there not another one that he had?
What, there was Extra Moist.
Extra Moist, yeah.
What?
Jade Puget had a straight edge hardcore band called, it was supposed to be called Extremist, but it was spelt XTRMST, like all in capitals.
So extra moist works too.
Can this guy just not spell? I mean, is that the problem? That Jade Puget can't spell? All of his bands have misspelled names?
My favorite was Extra Moist because it works. Like, you could fit it in, you know?
Anal cunt, Extra Moist. On tour
together. Who do you guys like better? Blah, Flag, Painted Blah, or None More Blah?
I like Black Lips.
I don't. There's a part of me that feels that they all these crazy shit band names that the AFI guys come up with, that they think there's a bit of like it's avant-garde or something to have this provocative wacky name that they give it, like the name is somehow really selling the crazy mind bending music that you're gonna get from this. But holy shit, like, why can't you just give a band a name that isn't
like AJJ? That's a perfect
like AJJ. You mean anything.
Actress Jane Ray Jones. That Black Noise Records really took me by surprise.
What do you mean Black Noise? Because Black Noise Records is Brad Logan's label. This is Black Noise.
Can we tell you what noise. A good band name Actress Jane Ray Jones would be? Because you would have like flyers. You go into town, who's the punk show? And it's going to be like, oh, so come to this punk show. It's going to be like Mean Jeans and Bad Canoes and Actress January Jones.
Like, signing autographs. Yeah, it's like the more creative version of Free Beer, being your band Free Beer. That would be great. People are like, oh, I can get a picture with her. We can take a selfie. And then they show up and are extremely disappointed that it's a band that is, I don't know, are they even folk punk anymore?
You think that's bad? You think that's bad? Can you imagine who shows up at Extra Moist shows?
Not January Jones, that's for sure. Blah! So what do you guys anyways, think?
Yeah, that's happening. I have no opinion on that music coming out because I'm pretty sure last time it wasn't anything that was interesting to me.
It's like the exact conversation is last time.
Yeah, so there you go. Here's another thing. The Max Levine Ensemble has released the third video in their video trilogy. This premiered over on the AV Club. It is the video for the song Backlash Baby. It's the third part of a video trilogy that tells a story set to music from their new album of that same name. We on Punk News spoke to David Combs last year, and you can find the link to the interview for that and all the three videos from this series over on Punk News. John, in particular, you're a fan of this band, right?
I'm not a mega fan, but I am a fan, and I'm becoming more of a fan every year. The new album, what I like about Max Levine Ensemble, the main songwriter, Spoonboy, David Combs, he actually is a very, very good songwriter. His side project is called Spoonboy, and some of those songs sound like Billy Joel songs in that they're so incredibly well-crafted and put together. I like Max Levine Ensemble because they have very what I would call, I guess, emotional, personal lyrics, but it's not just some sad guy being sad. It's basically emotional music played to a hardcore beat, and not even like Embrace or emo stuff. It's like hardcore music sung by, I don't know, a guy that's not afraid to be sensitive. So I think this band is getting more interesting, and their new album is definitely their best. They've got a lot of great songs on it and a lot of interesting songs. The only reason I wanted to include, well, not the only reason I wanted to include, but I think it's, you know, it's cheaper and cheaper than ever to film music videos. And so I think this band did a really neat thing by linking them together as a story. I think the videos look great. I think the songs fit them really well. And I think it's just an exciting series. And so, you know, people are getting more and more bummed out about lyric videos. I think this represents the other side of the spectrum, that this is three music videos that are very well done that I think exploit music videos to almost their full potential.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we need more music videos out there that tell a tale, spin a yarn. I mean, like, if you combine these three, it's like, you know what, you're going on like 10 minutes or whatever. I mean, these songs are short, so maybe not even. But like Thriller type shit, like, it doesn't have to be like Thriller in production value, though this does look really good. But I think we need more videos like that where you're not just, like, half the time I click a music video, and even if it's for a band I love, like, I might click over to a different tab on my browser, and I'll keep listening to it, and maybe, like, click back towards the end and be like, oh, how'd that video end? Ah, whatever. You know?
True, I mean, true.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, I'm not afraid to admit that. I mean, there are some bands that make really, really funny videos, and you even got bands like OK Go who have made their name on making these really ridiculous, like, one-take music videos. Like, you've guys seen their stuff, right?
Yeah, but actually,
like,
is that
treadmills and all that.
Is that a detriment? Because, like, I don't care about the band at all. I just know they make videos. Like, their videos are too good. It takes away from the music.
You know? Yeah. I mean, yeah, their music has had less and less substance, even as far as, like, a pop rock band goes. Like, their first record was pretty solid, like, power pop, or I don't know, kind of like Apples in Stereo or something. But then, yeah, you're right, they got known for the videos. Well, in this case, the songs are good, like you said. And I've been a fan of Spoonboy, honestly, for a while. They kind of, like, hit that project kind of get lumped in with, like, Planet X stuff a little bit. I can't remember. I think they released something on Planet X, and that's how I
heard about Spoonboy. Yeah, a lot, I think.
Yeah. And then it just didn't kind of carry over to this group of his, but I'm digging these videos, and the interesting videos make sure that I listen to the whole song, which is cool.
So speaking of interesting videos, Greg, what's the last one we're going to talk about here?
What are we talking about? Let's see. Oh, Weezer! It's Weezer. You know, Weezer is cool, but sometimes they suck. It's that hard. Hard, you know, sometimes they're cool, sometimes they suck. You know, they released just a handful of shitty, shitty albums in the early 2010s. I don't know. What do you call this decade? But then their last album, Everything Will Be Alright in the End, was really fucking solid. I mean, everyone was like, oh, it's returned to, like, the Blue album. And no, not really. But it was solid, and I go back to it unlike most of their... My damn cat just knocked something over. And I know the lyrics, I can sing along with the songs, so in that aspect, it is kind of like their old stuff. Now, the singles they've released for this upcoming stuff, they keep releasing more and more songs, and I keep getting more and more disappointed because it's kind of like the Rivers from a few years ago where it seemed like, oh, here, I'll put down my guitar and we'll put Josh Freese on drums and Pat will come up and play guitar so I can just jump around and, like, you know, I got like a white jumpsuit on and I'm just being this wacky rock and roller or whatever. Instead of just being like the shy, nerdy guy that we all loved in the 90s, writing these sensitive, you know, fuzzy rock songs. However, this LA Girls, I think, is the best of these new tracks. I don't think it's amazing, but I think the video is it starts out kind of cute and then gets bizarre with this female bodybuilder. I kind of like the modern angle with like this young kid in love and he's sending Snapchat stuff, which could have gone in a really weird or like gross direction, but it started out kind of cute. I think it should have not – it should have had like a regular Weezer-y type girl in it and not some adult female bodybuilder. Did you guys watch it?
Yeah, I actually thought that made it interesting, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, okay.
And the question that I had while watching the video, are they making fun of this, the way this female bodybuilder works, or are they appreciating her as being a unique-ish individual? And they don't give a clear answer. I think it's what makes this video interesting. Not a huge fan of the song, but I thought the contrast was interesting and amusing. Not mind-blowing, but clever enough.
Yeah. Like, why is there a Z on the end of Girls? Like, it's that kind of thing that makes me think, oh, they're going to make an album like Ratitude again. Like, just them naming an album Ratitude, it's like, I don't know. It's like, how old are you guys? Like, really? You know?
Yeah, actually, I had that opinion there. Where, like, so I went and I watched this and – well, first of all, I just of total nothing to do with what I'm about to say. I'm not familiar with Snapchat, and I did not know what it was going on. But, anyways, so it's like kids these days. What the fuck are they doing? No, but this song sounds like fairly Weezer-y to me, yeah. But like in a good way. And so far, the music from this record that I've heard does not strike me as the goofy Ratitude Weezer. It doesn't strike me as like I compared Weezer to like the Offspring on a past episode, and I haven't got that sense from the stuff on here. Like they're not novelty songs, they're not goofy, they're not, you know, they're not kitschy, which is good. But I saw that this song was called LA Girls with a Z, and my immediate thought was that fucking Beverly Hills song, right? Where I was just like, ugh, like, well, no, why are they doing that? But then you song doesn't sound goofy. So,
you know, Beverly Hills is like, a lot of people point to that as like what started the downward trend with this band. Now that album Make Believe, I still stand by as being pretty solid, but coming off of Maladroit, like, and then all of a sudden they have, like this gimmick novelty song, and it starts the album. Like they keep putting these shitty songs at track one, so it's like you go to stream the album, and you're like, nah, no thanks. Like then the Red album is like Pork and Beans or whatever, and their videos are cool, but it's like, meh, no, it's another throwaway song. And then there's actually decent songs buried in the track list. So I don't know why that, like, it turns me off that he does stuff like this. And I guess I'm saying he, like Rivers. But what are some of the – shit, I'm looking right now. What are some of the other songs they've released? Thank God for Girls. That one, like, I don't know. That one seemed like kind of teenager-y. And, I mean, I know they're Cheap Trick loving power pop band or whatever, but again, it just doesn't age well, and it makes me think they're gonna put out a shitty album. Yeah, the song's fine, but like the titles and the lyrical content are weird to the point where I'm getting a little anxious about it, because I would love another album as good as the last one, but I don't know, I'm worried he's turning back towards having rappers guest on songs and like shit like that just doesn't work. Fall Out Boy type shit.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm curious. I feel that like I've missed so much Weezer stuff since I decided that I don't care anymore. That that if I'm to go in for this new record, that that implies that I have to go back and revisit like everything after Maladroit, and I don't really care to do that because I avoided it in the first place for a reason. So yeah, so I don't know, we'll see. Like they've had like a holy fuck, I've been looking at Wikipedia right now, they've had like a million records since Maladroit, so that's
yeah. Like, they're releasing them at this rapid clip, and they were all bad, and there should have just been more editing, and instead of, like, three albums in 3 years, it should have been one album that was all of the good songs off those three albums, you know, because, what was it, Hurley, Ratitude, and Red Album were all in, like, a very brief time period, and then there was also a B-sides thing that came out. It was just, like, almost like diarrhea of the mouth for Rivers or something, just like, here's all these pop rock songs, but then Everything Will Be All Right in the End was a solid song. I mean, it still wasn't chock full of a ton of substance, and it was no Blue Album or Pinkerton, but it was a solid album. Great songs from front to back. I enjoyed the whole thing. And now I'm worried turning back to the Ratitude style of thinking. I mean, maybe the songs will be good, but I feel like his brain is back where he wants to be a pop star again. And is going to fail again. I mean, Weezer will never be, you know, platinum. They'll never reach where they were with Blue Album.
Weezer's pretty big. I mean,
yeah, but they're not going to. I mean, are they charting with their albums like of the past decade?
Yeah, I think so, dude. I think their last album hit at like number five.
Number five? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's number five in 2015 or whatever. Yeah. So that's like number 62.
See, but their last album was great. I mean, where I'd have to look up where like Hurley landed, or
the last album was number five.
That's cool.
And let's see.
So like rock charts, not like overall Billboard.
No, Billboard.
Really?
Yeah.
That's surprising. Okay, so I guess they are kind of big, but they're definitely not selling the amount of records they did in the 90s. That's just not possible anymore.
Hurley hit at number six, but like Adam said, it's number six post 2010, which does not mean the same thing as number six, you know, 1995.
Right. I mean, I have a deep love for Weezer, but even I stopped buying their albums after the Red Album. Like, I liked Make Believe. Red Album, he started letting the other dudes sing. And that was a short-lived thing, but that I was like, no. And then I didn't get Hurley or Ratitude. And Scott actually is the one that finally brought me back. He's like, dude, it's actually really good. And like he put it as his number one album for 2014 or whenever that was. And I'm like, maybe not, but it's good. So this, I don't know. I'm hesitant to get really excited about this record. But this particular video, I thought it was interesting. Started out cute and then got kind of weird in an interesting way, like you said, John. So that's promising.
All right. Well, I think that about does it. Should I do you know their song, John? Do you want me to jump in? Or
play a tune, Adam. Play a tune, man.
All right. So in a couple weeks, there's a bunch of record release shows for the new Dirty Null record, and there's one coming into my town here, and one of the bands that they're bringing down with them is a band that I may have seen play with them before called Solids. Solids is a two-piece band out of Montreal. They used to play at least a kind of music that people were really referring to as slacker rock, and that didn't really make a whole lot of sense. Their stuff was kind of distorted and shoegazy, so I don't know if people were maybe taking like the shoegazy thing and getting the slacker thing out of it. I don't know what that term means at all, but anyways, they have a new EP called Else that's coming out this year on Top Shelf and Dine Alone. The stuff from it is kind of cool. This is a song called Blank Stare. So this is the song Blank Stare by Montreal's Solids.
You only care to join the talk.
solid.
And that was Blank Stare by, as Greg Simpson said, solid. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Greg, thank you for being on the podcast. I think you brought a real ratitude angle to the discussion today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad I could talk a lot and make this not such a short episode like you guys have been doing lately. These, like, under an hour episodes. I'm like, what the fuck, guys?
And you know, Adam White, I think while you were talking, I think you brought a real maladroit angle to the discussion, Adam. So I really appreciate that.
Which Weezer album are you, John?
I would say I'm Everything Will Be All Right in the End. And I don't think that's the only. Adam, I got one question for you, though. I forgot. Is that new Davey Havoc band, what's the name of that band? I want to check them out.
Block Audio, right?
Block audio?
Is that not how
Block Audio. We'll see you next week.